Rebellion.com. What? Comic Book Chronicles has dopest trace chronic, yo. I'm steady tripping over them pages and dogging Adam Black. No. Yeah. Graphic or not, this is motherfucking comic book art. The man, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, what? We don't give a, as long as them pages are hot. And it's written by Chris Claremont, Jeff Johns, Alan Moore, or Grant Morrison. Just hey, left.
And welcome to a neuroscience episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Tonight I'm joined by Stud Monkey, a.k.a. Dirt himself.
From welcome back.
Network.com.
Yeah, I was on vacation last week, so I missed you.
Yeah.
I didn't miss you, but I missed
you. You missed two episodes last week.
Yeah, we're they were good.
Primetime stuff last week.
Yeah, you had some good stuff going on last week.
We were like, quick, Dirt's not here. Let's double up my episodes.
Let's get some real guests.
And the man behind the sound effects is, of course, Agent 70.
What's up, what's up?
And last but not least, since we were talking about guests that we had last week, we decided to have another one this week. This is, we also have with us one of our listeners slash viewers, at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Hello, hello, thank you.
Joining us tonight to get in on some of the comic book fun.
Well, I can.
Yep. Are you limited on time?
Well, no, not tonight, but I'm just saying the way my work generally is.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah. Sweet. So the housekeeping things to get out the way. The website is theclicknation.com. Go there to find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles, comic book reviews, other podcasts, the Click Nation podcasts, and much more. And make sure to follow the Twitter account at the Click Nation. That's usually where. Yep.
I lost the pointer. My bad.
And make sure to like the Facebook account, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Just search for the Click Nation. And also join the community group, the Click Nation community. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. So, as normal, we will begin with comic book news from this past week, which I didn't start collecting until today. I was like, I wonder if we had any new important news this week. And then a couple of things popped off today. So I was like, oh, okay, I can add some stuff. Let me see. First up, we have... So supposedly, Bradley Cooper is being considered to voice Rocket Raccoon in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Which you would think, wouldn't they have that all figured out yet? I mean, aren't they filming that movie now? You know?
And you could insert talking... parts later.
Yeah, they can do a lot of that in post.
Yeah, but it just seems like one of those things that you'd think they would have figured out already. You know, it's like the movie is in production. Like, they have sets, they have costumes, they are filming scenes. You'd think they'd have the actors figured out, you know?
Yeah, I'm with Stud Monkey on this one. Or Dirt. What are you going by today? Dirt.
I gotta keep you on your toes.
I think I have to side with Dirt on this one. I am surprised that they've waited this long to cast who's probably going to end up being the comic relief character in the movie. So, you know, it is kind of surprising. I mean, you know, they basically had the entire cast minus Rocket Raccoon at Comic-Con.
And Groot.
Exactly. Groot, you know, I guess.
They didn't cast Groot until last week.
Yeah.
Which is Vin Diesel, for those who don't know.
Typecasting, great.
How's that? Oh, because he's wooden?
A little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if we even mentioned that last week on last Friday's show.
I don't even think it's official.
Yeah, it's all weird as far as what they have and haven't announced.
Yeah, but ultimately, you know, the rumors seem to be pretty strong, and nothing contrary has come out since. So, you know, maybe we're just waiting for the lawyers to get their cut, and you know, the I's to be dotted and the T's crossed. So we'll see. That's pretty cool.
I made the joke that I would have figured Marvel would save Bradley Cooper to play Captain America once Chris Evans is recast.
Nay. I don't think that's a good idea.
Someone made a joke that he'll be like 40 years old by then.
Yeah, no, that one actually I think gets a gong for me. I don't think Bradley Cooper is right. What do you think? What do you guys think?
But then Robert Downey Jr. is playing a 40-something-year-old Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Bradley Cooper's still hot. So instead of trying to find a voice that would probably better be suited, you know, out of an unknown, then they'll just get the person who's pretty still hot.
Yeah. The hot actor at the time.
Yeah.
But okay. So that's the first bit of news. Next up is, I just jotted this down and I honestly haven't done too much research on this, but maybe y'all are more familiar with it. The whole stuff with the Killing Joke and Batman, and the Batman killed Joker at the end of it. Who's the creator that said that Batman killed Joker at the end of it?
Was it Alan Grant Moore? Morrison?
No, Alan Moore.
Well, yeah, no, Grant Morrison was doing the interview, and he was saying that if you look at that page closely, he believes that Joker stops laughing because Batman is choking the life out of him. And Brian Boland, the artist, he went to Twitter and he said something along the lines of, you know, well, I can tell you, you know, because of what's in the script, that what happens for certain, you know, at the end of the at the end of that issue is, and then he just kind of stops and kind of left it open. And I think that was kind of Moore's whole point, is that you could interpret it one way or you could interpret it the other way. And I believe he said that when he originally wrote it, it was not supposed to be canon. It was not supposed to be in the main universe. It was supposed to be its own standalone story. Mm-hmm. But it was so popular that it just kind of carried over and became mainstream. So you could just kind of ignore, you know, Batman killing Joker if you want it to be part of the regular universe. Or you could say that Batman killed Joker because it's a standalone story.
I guess it would help if I actually read it.
or you just choked him out UFC style, you know?
The only thing I know about the Killing Joke is Barbara got shot in the back.
Wait. Well, I missed that. Tim, did you just say you haven't read the Killing Joke yet?
I have not read the Killing Joke.
Really?
A little behind, huh?
Word? Yeah.
Damn. Still working on Atlantis Attacks?
Oh, my goodness. You gotta read that, Tim. It doesn't take all that long.
You know,
it's not one of those things where I can actually, you know, cut you a break because it's like a 28-part series or something.
No, you read all of Akira in the original manga? What? It's only 72 volumes at 300 pages apiece.
My goodness. Even I don't think I've read that. Jeez.
No, I was Make Mine Marvel back in the day, so I wasn't reading too much DC back then.
That's how you miss out.
Yeah. That's what the internet is for, to read Wikipedia so I can know what happened in it, at least.
That's right. All right.
And then Marvel today announced the Marvel Experience thing that didn't interest me at all, but I guess it got a lot of it made the rounds online. And now I've clicked this link, and let's see how long it takes for this.
So that started already?
Well, I'm about to. I guess it sounds like some kind of amusement park type thing. I'm about to read the official release. What it brings up.
Are you?
Coming next year will be the Marvel Experience, which is described as a traveling superhero-themed tour that's the size of two football fields, featuring state-of-the-art interactive and multimedia technology, including a 4D motion ride and original 3D animated features, allowing fans to be a part of the action. So my first question is...
So it is not that Spider-Man musical that's been having problems?
No. How can they transport something that's the size of two football fields? Is my first question.
It's probably an installation. They're probably going to put in it sounds like what is it, like the fan access that WWE does, and the fan expo for like the Super Bowl and All Star games and stuff like that.
So you just go to an area and then set it all up.
Right, that's what it sounds like to me.
It doesn't interest me at all.
It's for the kids, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not the target audience for it, maybe, so.
The next gen.
There's some other stuff here, but I don't feel like reading all this.
Oh, I just had a couple of quick news tidbits. Boom Studios launched an artist search on Facebook.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Yeah, if anyone out there, any listeners, any viewers out there want to submit to Boom Studios for pencilers, inkers, colorists, and letterers, not writers, they want art samples. So, make sure to head to that. It's on Facebook. You could probably just go to your Facebook page and put into the search box Boom Studios and find the artist submissions page from there. Bleeding Cool posted a couple of submissions that they pulled down from, I guess, the screenshots. They're okay so far, but if you think your stuff is up to snuff, give it a shot. Why not?
And supposedly they'll give you feedback on their Facebook page.
Yeah, I mean, this is the future of artist submissions, right? You know, everyone's able
It's similar to what they used to do at the conventions.
Exactly.
And they still do it sometimes, where they have one or two editors sitting at a table, and you stand there with your portfolio and you wait in line for 6 hours to have them take a look at it. So.
Exactly. Because I still think I don't want to say the vast majority, but a good number of aspiring artists still sit down with, you know, that piece of Blue Line Bristol board and start, you know, doing their pages and working on their sequential art and stuff. So, you know, they bring that to the conventions for portfolio review. This is just the next step.
Well, one of the nice things about doing it this way is that they're opening it up for digital submissions.
Right. Coloring.
Yeah. Well, and even penciling people, a lot of people now pencil and ink directly on the tablet into the computer. Right. So this gives them the ability to do it on the computer and submit it through their Facebook page and, you know, not have to worry about trying to print it out on a piece of Bristol to take it in or, you know, anything like that. They can just submit it digitally. And once, if they do it that way, you know, they say this is 100% pure digital, you know, piece of artwork, then you can do things like when was the file created? How long were they working on it? You know, what programs did they use? You can
check the metadata, out, right?
Yeah,
right.
Go in the metadata. So, because there are a lot of times people go to a convention and they go, oh, yeah, I drew this in a day. And you know that, you know, they spent a week and a half, you know, trying to get that page together. There's no way they'd be able to keep up with the schedule.
Ah, I didn't know all that. Tricky.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Speaking of digital stuff, I know that just reminded me, Wacom announced that they're coming out with two new tablets this week. I didn't save the link with the info, but for those that draw and do stuff digitally, there's two different tablets. I think one tablet's a Windows 8 and one's an Android tablet.
Oh, Android.
Yeah.
Nice.
Interesting.
And they're, of course, expensive, but... two different options.
Yeah. It's funny, just real quick, it's funny that you mentioned cost, you know, I think that it's something I wanted to mention in last week's episodes with our guest creators, our guest digital creators, the cost, the kind of high overhead costs to get started in digital comics. I mean, you know, listen, physical, you know, like, you know, that paper, that Bristol paper is not cheap. You still got to get pencils and all that stuff and maybe like a nice drawing board. But it's still cheaper than getting, you know, that sometimes a legal copy of Photoshop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, and a scanner sometimes, too, to get your work in. If you're not working off a fancy, whatchamacallit, tablet, you know, to input your stuff, like a Wacom tablet. So, you know, I wonder if that's not a barrier sometimes for these people, you know, for aspiring artists, like the cost, like what, you know, how does that affect what they use to submit their very first work?
Mm-hmm. And I know I saw a couple artists discussing the new Wacom tablets online. I know Ryan Stegman and Ryan Otley were tweeting back and forth about it when it was first announced. I think it was like Monday or Tuesday.
I'm going to look that up. There's a couple other bits of news, just real quick. There's some sad news. What's that?
I said I'm breaking news, but go ahead.
Oh, you have breaking news?
I think so. It's apparently to a couple of places, Ben Affleck is going to be the new Batman in the Superman Batman film.
No.
Yeah.
He may have been the bomb in Phantoms, but that's about it. No.
That's funny. In other news, Marvel has confirmed that Venom is ending in October with issue number 42.
Yeah, so, that was the other piece of news I had.
Right. We mentioned that. I think we mentioned last week that in the second show, the review show, that Venom did not appear in the solicits for November. So this definitely confirms that Venom is coming to an end. And the new character they just introduced, Mania, may not survive her introduction and her origin story. Drama.
Wait, what was the last thing you said?
Mania, the sidekick that they introduced.
Uh-huh.
She may not survive.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She may not survive. Kind of sad. And
Venom actually came out this week, which we'll get to during the show.
We will get
I just got tied up looking at Twitter and everyone reacting to this Affleck news.
Horrible. Oh, yeah.
Spreading
propaganda.
That is funny.
Robert Liefeld just tweeted something. What he came up? Liefeld first says, then says, on with the show, # Superman Batman. Yeah, so if you're watching live, let us know what you think of Ben Affleck as Batman, if this is true or not.
Well, supposedly Warner Brothers sent out a press release.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, so this...
Yeah, I see it blowing up on Twitter now.
I see a Variety article.
Let's see here. Yeah, Indie Leaks of speculation, Ben Affleck has been set to star as Batman, a.k.a. Bruce Wayne. Affleck and filmmaker Zack Snyder will create an entirely new incarnation of the character in Snyder's as-of-yet-untitled project, bringing Batman and Superman together for the first time on the big screen and continuing the director's vision of their universe, which he established in Man of Steel. The announcement was made today by Greg Silverman, President, Creative Development and Worldwide Production, and Sue Kroll, President, Worldwide Marketing and International Distribution for Warner Brothers Pictures. The studio has slated the film to open worldwide on July
17th, 2015. Oh, my God.
We tweet out the show link for people. Maybe we'll get some viewers.
That is crazy.
Man of Steel has earned more than $650 million worldwide to date. Not bad. Not bad, a little chunk of change.
A little chunk of change, if you will, okay, as DeRose would say.
Wow, that's kind of crazy.
Man, people are going crazy. This is funny.
Yeah, this is literally breaking. Thanks, Roddy Cat.
No problem. I just happened to see it.
Well, you know, I mean, if he can bring any of the wit and charm and finesse he brought to Daredevil, then this movie is just bound to rake in the whole dollar and a half, you know.
Where is it? It's buried.
If you go to Bleeding Cool, it's the first thing on their entertainment side of the page.
No kidding. I just Googled it and I saw the Variety article.
Yeah, that I think I just retweeted it.
Ugh.
So, you know what? He would probably actually make a pretty decent Bruce Wayne. I don't know about Batman so much, but I guess we will see.
Wow.
Huh, interesting. So, Warner Bros. Knew to release it during the show live so we could talk about it. That's how this stuff works, people. We run Hollywood.
All right, what's next?
I guess that's a good place to end news, I think.
I did see one thing about Ant-Man today. The director was talking about that, and he said it's meant to be a small little standalone film. It's not a... Ant-Man may very well appear in, you know, something else later down the road, but his movie is not a puzzle piece of an Avengers project.
And there will be no Ultron in it either.
Right.
That makes sense. Not the Ultron part, but just the keeping it low-key. Because it's going to be hard enough getting people to go watch a movie where a guy shrinks to the size of an ant and he's a superhero.
I'm kind of torn on that because... You know, they're missing out on an opportunity, you know, much like you would when, you know, Wolverine or Spider-Man appears in a comic book that's not selling all that much. Feedback. There we go. You'd expect to see maybe a guest appearance, you know, to boost proverbial sales, butts in the seats.
Yeah, they might have some Easter eggs in there. You know, he turns on the TV and you see something happening and he, you know, makes some sort of comment or whatever so that you know it's tied together. But I mean, the point he's trying to make is you're not going to see, a battle cruiser from Thanos' invading army crash in his small town that he has to react to that, you know, makes it some sort of direct spinoff or makes some sort of, you know, nothing's going to pop up in this movie that you have to see in order for Thor 3 to make sense, you know, anything like that. You know, it's set to be its own little thing. It's, you know, part of the universe, but not, you know, a crossover vehicle.
Yeah, see Greg Capullo's tweet just now.
So I kind of have one of many probably dumb theories about this. So I wonder if they're not really tying... Like, the Ant-Man movie is pretty much not tied to the universe. Well, it's tied to the universe, but he wasn't in Avengers, and he's not going to be in... Well, I guess he's going to be in Avengers 2, I'm not sure. I don't know if they've been back and forth on that, but I kind of wonder if they just... What's that? Yeah.
To Ant-Man?
So I wonder...
Ant-Man takes place after.
Right, okay. So I wonder if they just say, no, let's not do this Hank Pym stuff so we can just avoid... The unpleasant stuff in this history, even though nobody would have known about that in the cinematic universe. You know? I don't know. That was just a really something I thought about when all that other news came out.
They can skip the wife beating and everything?
Basically.
They still need to cast him, which would be nice.
Simon Pegg. Did you see the Simon Pegg stuff from a few days ago?
Ain't no one paying attention to him.
I don't know. Some people did because there were some people who, well, I don't know. I can't remember, but I know there were some articles flying out that he tweeted about it, and people were like, "Oh, he's gonna be Ant-Man," and then he came out afterwards like, "No, I'm just supporting my friend's movie." Yeah, basically, that's what he did. So it was pretty funny.
Okay,
we shall see. All righty.
So on to comics.
Make those?
Yeah. Even physical copies. And we will start with... What will we start with? And I'll go through some Dark Horse comments just to give them a... So we at least mentioned them on the show.
Well, here, I read one.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I know. It's freaky, huh? Dream Thief number 4 came out. I still love this series. I know some of you guys have problems with it, but this particular issue was set around a poker game at Graceland. Basically, every year they do like a high-stakes poker tournament in Graceland. You know, big shots from all over the South, people who claim that they knew Elvis, you know, come and are part of this thing. And so he gets roped into it, you know, without giving too much away the story, he gets roped into it and has to play in this high-stakes poker game. And the art in this book from Greg Smallwood, you know, poker is all about blind bluffs and tells and body language and all those types of things. And he does a fantastic job of showing people's, you know, facial tics and the way they react to stuff and, you know, the way their emotions on their face will change as different things happen. And, you know, if you've ever seen a movie like Rounders, you know, there's a lot of the same stuff that you saw in a movie like that with the high-stakes poker game, you know, that kind of goes along with it. And, you know, again, it was just a really it's kind of a thick read. But it was really enjoyable. I don't know why I don't play poker, but I love watching high stakes poker and, you know, reading these fictionalized accounts, whatever. And this was just a really fun, issue. And it also ended on a really great cliffhanger, type of thing that makes you wonder what the heck's going on. And, you know, waiting for that final issue to wrap it all up. So Dream Thief and Dark Horse.
Is there a Teddy KGB in there?
Is there what?
Is there a Teddy KGB in there?
No.
That was a Rounders reference.
Yeah, I know. There, no Oreo cookies, no.
Pay that man his money.
There was a guy who was a friend of Elvis, though. So, I mean, you know.
That's cool. Awesome.
Yeah, I never even got through the first issue of Dream Thief just because it was like 50 pages or something, I remember.
It has a lot of dialogue sometimes.
I can't read all this.
Artwork is great. You gotta check it out.
Okay. So there's your one
Dark Horse.
Dark Horse for the week. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, DC Comics. Yeah, we can talk about that. Let's see.
Yes. Alphabetically through the list.
Yeah, I was trying to decide what to start with that a bit. I guess I can do Animal Man. Mention at least Animal Man number 23 is out.
Did anybody read it?
I can say, is Doug still doing his picture thing? And yes, he is. We missed it last week. I was like, man, this is the same. I'm used to saying the comic and having it flip through the.
I've noticed how nice it is to have it up there to look at, to remind you of, like, yeah. Did I read that? Oh, yeah, I did read that.
But I'm sure no one here read it, right?
Nope.
Okay. Batman 66 number 2, which is, I guess, collects the digital copies, right?
Right.
Cover looks nice.
I have it. I've picked up the first two issues just because my aunt... is a huge fan of the old Batman TV show ever since she was a kid. And so I have the first two issues to give to her, and I figured, you know, well, as long as I have them here, I might as well read them, you know, before I give them to her. I just haven't gotten to it yet, you know. But, I mean, it's very pretty, and the likenesses are dead on when you flip through it. So if you were a fan of the show, it's definitely something you'd want to add to your collection.
Okay. Next up, we have Batman and Nightwing number 23.
Which was good. Yeah.
I thought they already did a Batman Nightwing issue of this.
What do you think? What do you think? Dirt, you said you read it?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It was deeper than I expected. I mean, I guess, you know, the premise of the story is that Batman has set up a virtual reality simulation reconstructing the day that Damian died. And he's basically going through it again and again and again and again, trying to figure out how he could have saved his son. And he goes through it. And, of course, Alfred calls for Nightwing to come back to try to, you know, snap Bruce out of it. And instead, Nightwing decides to go into the simulation and try to help him and see if they can figure out a way to solve it. But then also, Alfred, after everybody leaves, Alfred decides he wants to go back because he feels guilty that he let Damian leave the cave that night. And he's been holding all the guilt on himself. And so you see for the first time really through Alfred's eyes as an actual character, what Alfred goes through and the type of guilt he has. And I think that part of it, you know, the way it dealt with Damian actually being a small child, which you forget a lot of times because of the way he acts, and that interaction with Alfred, that, you know, when I got done with it, I really felt bad.
That part I agree with. I definitely like that. I like that this, you know, this issue dealt with, you know, the two arguably closest members of the Batman family. You know, two Batman, you know, which is, you know, being Alfred and Nightwing slash, you know, the original Robin. So, mm-hmm. I could have gotten by with this being the only follow-up issue dealing with the repercussions of Damian. I don't know if we needed all the other ones.
And I thought Nightwing had already had his issue or team up.
I don't know. I'll have to go back and take a look at the archives. But
so this thing's been going on forever.
Exactly, and that was my feeling too. I felt like this issue could have been, you know, would have been better served a little earlier in the sequence, and just, you know, this being it. But, you know, I agree with Doug. I thought it was well done. I just thought that it seemed to be, you know, too little, too late in my eyes, you know, to redeem this whole, like, kind of, I don't want to call it a money grab, but you know what I mean?
Whole event. My response to that, though, would be this should be the big event that haunts him for a long time. Like, this shouldn't be, you know, a done in one and, oh, it's time to move on. You know, like, this should haunt him. Like, I hope in 10 years, there's still a reference to this somewhere, because this should be the type of thing, you know, to bring a real world horrible thing into it. If you think about someone like John Walsh, you know, going through something like this, turning him into that, set him on his crusade. Right, Batman's already on a crusade. Right. This is what should push him to the next level, you know?
Or at least sustains it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think it is, you know, the Bat family is a very large group, and you don't often think about, like, how many books really kind of tie in with Batgirl and Catwoman and Red Robin and Nightwing, and then you've got, you know, four books just for Batman himself, and it is something that should reverberate through all of them, and everybody should, you know, feel the effects of this, and it should, you know, reverberate through. So, I mean, some of the stories, like, I don't care about Catwoman, so it's like, well, how does he react around Catwoman after this? Well, I don't care, because I don't like Catwoman, but, you know, seeing some of the different stuff, like the Jason Todd stuff, because technically Jason Todd went through this, you know, having it, you know, this particular issue, I almost wish the Nightwing part was, like, issue one, and then the next issue would have been, it would have said Batman and Alfred Pennyworth, you know, and it would have been just the Alfred story, you know, taking a little longer. That would probably be my only criticism, is breaking it into two parts instead of having it jammed together as one. But hey, you got Villain Month next month, so they got to wrap it up.
Gotcha. All righty.
Yeah, I gave up on this Batman and series because I got tired of reading, like, the same stories over and over again, but with substitute a different character in its place. Let's see. Next up is Batman Beyond Universe number one.
Somewhere.
Which is the collection of the digital first issues of Batman Beyond 2.0 and Justice League Beyond 2.0.
Has anybody been reading any of the digital ones?
I've read Batman Beyond Universe or Batman Beyond 2.0, but I haven't read Justice League one yet. I guess I'll go ahead and buy it on Comixology. I like the Batman one. So, and I've always been wanting to read these Batman Beyond comics. I just never made time for them. And since they relaunched them all and moved them a year into the future, even though they're already in the future, a year ahead of where the storylines left off, I was like, this is a good jumping on point.
I guess Batman Beyond was just never my series. Like, I had the animated series when I was in high school, and this came out like when I was in college, when I wasn't really watching much, you know, TV and stuff anyway. And then by the time I got out and I was back to watching a lot of stuff on TV, the show was already over. So Batman Beyond was just never really been part of my my lexicon.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned
that. I liked the show, you know, like I caught most of it when it came out. I just haven't had, you know, a real reason to, inkling to try this digitally. So, you know, maybe now that it's in print, I might take a look at it. You know, it's kind of cool. I think that, I mean, to me, one of the coolest draws of the cartoon was that it still had Kevin Conroy as the voice of Bruce Wayne, the elder Bruce Wayne, you know, like the older Bruce Wayne.
Right.
I was a big fan of the cartoon, so I'm all about some Batman Beyond.
That's cool. Did you read it?
The comic?
Yeah.
Well, I read the first issue of the new one. Yeah, I haven't gotten into the previous iteration of it, gotcha. But I hopefully will.
Sounds good. Alrighty, moving on.
I had previously read the last two issues of Birds of Prey. Issue 23 came out, but I'm not reading it anymore.
Oh, you just totally skipped over Batwoman?
Yep.
Birds of Prey, anybody?
I just mentioned it because I at least have read the last two issues, but I'm not reading it anymore.
Okay.
The art was pretty good, but I just don't care about the story. And yes, Batwoman 23 came out.
Nope.
Cover was kind of interesting. Maybe I should at least mention these books so I can at least see what the covers look like.
You know, I don't read much DC at all, but there's been a couple of them. As a matter of fact, I think we're probably going to get to a couple of them that I'm kind of interested in checking out, possibly. See what you guys say.
We'll make sure not to spoil too much then. Let us know.
Meh, I don't. It's DC. I don't care.
Okay. All right, let's go, Tim. What we got?
Fables. I'm only mentioning it because people
love it.
Yeah.
People love it. I just never got into it.
I tried, and I just could not. I just didn't like the whole classic fairy tales as, like, mean, bitchy people, and they're all sleeping around on each other, and it's like they made a soap opera out of, you know, these classic characters. I'm just like, I don't care.
All righty. Green Lantern, New Guardians, number 23. Anybody? Bueller?
Did I read this? No.
I read this. Not yet. And there was actually the one line that I took note of. Someone in this book actually says to Kyle Rayner, keep hope alive. And I couldn't help but read that in a Jesse Jackson, like, inner voice. you know, it's just another step in the Relic story where he's basically just overpowering all the various Lantern cores. I'm not going to reveal why he's doing it because they don't really say. But there's a couple of cool little tidbits in here to kind of explain his backstory a little bit and his reasonings and his motivations. So if you're interested in the Green Lantern Corps universe, this is probably an important issue to read because there's definitely some cool stuff happening in here. All right.
Next up. Yeah, I haven't got this to finish that up. I haven't got to it yet, but I will be reading it this weekend. Oh, and I actually listed the books that I read over the weekend that I hadn't had time to get to that I didn't get to mention last week, but I'll get to that at the end of the show.
Yeah, we'll do it at the end because I got a couple too.
Because we say we're going to start doing that now. Every time we say, I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to get to it this weekend,
just to prove that we actually did it.
Yep. Okay, let me jot these down. Next one was Justice League Dark number 23. Actually, yeah, that one.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. Unless someone wants to talk about He-Man and the Masters of the Universe number 5.
Well, I can if you want me to.
Go ahead.
Please do.
I'm trying to think of what I can say that I haven't already said before. You know, it's building its own mythos. It continues to do its own thing. The characters do have a Jack Kirby fourth world type feel to them, where they are mythological and sci-fi at the same time. They are continuing with Princess Adora, She-Ra. You know, basically she was kidnapped as a child and has been raised by Hordak, which is a twist on the character. It's something new for the mythos that's never been done. So DC is, you know, stepping out and doing their own thing and, you know, getting away from the toy bios and, you know, all that kind of stuff and telling their own, you know, version of the story. You know, one of the things is when I was growing up, you know, as a kid, of course, I watched Masters of the Universe. You know, everybody did. And we all had the toys and, you know, whatever. But I never cared anything about She-Ra. I never cared, you know, these, you know, because those were girl toys, you know. And they're like, I'm not touching those girl toys. but they've interwoven them together.
Somebody didn't have a sister that was in the target demographic.
No, because I had an older sister. So my sister was beyond this stuff by the time
it came out.
She was too busy buying those Lisa Frank puffy stickers and that kind of stuff. But jelly bracelets, you know. And the way that they've woven the story together and the way that they've kind of revealed some of these secrets of the of the characters and who these people really are and some of the things that have happened. For the first time, I actually kind of care about those characters. Like, not enough that I'm going to buy, like, a She-Ra toy or Princess of Power t-shirt or anything like that, but enough that I'm not looking at this going, oh, man, like, they put She-Ra on it, now I don't want to read this. You know, because, mm-hmm. you know, a few years ago, I would have bypassed it on the stand and just be like, no, I'm not reading that one. That's She-Ra. You know, they've actually, Keith Giffen has put together a story here where it feels, you know, the toy line, it was just kind of like, well, here's this whole line of boy toys. So now we're going to shoehorn a girl's line into it. And this feels like it's actually woven together in a way that makes sense.
Okay. How's the art on the inside?
The art's really good. I don't think the guy who does the inside does the covers, but it's very similar. You're not going to, if you like the art on the cover and then expect to, you know, see something similar on the inside, it is similar. It very well could be the same guy. I don't know. It's not signed on the front that I see anywhere to double check, but the artwork on the inside is very well done. And it's consistent. And that's one thing that with a lot of licensed properties, they switch artists every issue, or the artist that they have is too busy drawing the suits and the outfits, and so the face kind of looks a little wonky when you go from panel to panel, you know. They've done a really good job of keeping it consistent, and it's a very clean clean art style. I enjoy.
Okay. So that's Master He-Man and Masters of the Universe. So now to Justice League Dark number 23. Which I have not read, but it will be mentioned on next week's show after I read it this weekend.
Anybody else read it?
I read it.
What'd you think, Dirt?
There's certain parts of it I like, and certain parts of it I'm really confused by.
I got a quick question before you get going.
Uh-huh.
Did you read, I think it was last week's Justice League of America?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
It was fine. I didn't hate it, you know.
Same reaction I had is I'm wondering, is this the same way?
It's similar in the way that, you know, they are telling this ongoing story, so you are picking up something that's already started and it's ending before the story is ending. You know, you really feel like you're getting a chapter. As far as like each issue goes, like this is a crossover where you're picking up Justice League Dark, but there's as much Justice League and Justice League America in this issue of Dark as there is Dark appearing in Justice League and Justice League of America. You know what I mean? It's the fact that you know, all of these books are really kind of interchangeable at this point. They can put whatever on the title. And it's basically, you know, it just flows from one to the other. So on the one hand, it kind of, if you're going to sit down at some point in the future and say, oh, well, I'm just going to read Justice League, you're going to get to these chapters and be like, I don't know what the heck's going on, you know, because it does absolutely nothing to, you know, kind of recap it and bring it together if you haven't been reading the other ones. But if you are sitting down and reading them all in a row, then they all work fine. But not every issue has a big reveal, and not every issue has a big hook to it, because sometimes you, you know, they're doing the whole same thing Walking Dead does, where you've got an issue that goes up and then an issue that goes down and an issue that kind of holds steady and then an issue that builds up. And, you know, it's that same type of thing. So you don't always get the most exciting chapter every week, but I think it's still an interesting story. I enjoy, you know, seeing like, for instance, Shazam turned into Black Adam in this issue. Which
Wait,
is,
Shazam turned into Black Adam?
Oh, he certainly did.
Yeah.
Spoilers!
You got to read it to find out why. And then I think it's also great with certain characters. Everybody who comes in contact with the Pandora's box is getting corrupted, except apparently for John Constantine. He picks it up, lights a cigarette like it's no big deal. He's like, I don't have a soul left for this thing to corrupt. You know?
I thought he said it was because he had magic hands.
No. You know how that goes. What are they called? The Secret Society, Sinister Society, whoever they are. They're starting to reveal, like at the end of this issue is when they make their big reveal to the heroes. So it's like this is, you know, kind of the beginning of the final showdown. So there's only, I think, one more issue in this story. And then whatever happens, something cataclysmic happens at the end of this to kick off Villains Month. So
right.
I feel like this is a good build-up one, even though this wasn't a big reveal one. Like, you can definitely feel that things are ramping up and getting ready to explode.
Right. I concur. Pretty much what I wrote down is that, you know, we're approaching the end of the crossover, and this is just another step in that direction. You know, not much is, you know, I mean, some things are built upon, but really the climax is going to be in the next, I guess, the next Justice League issue. And, you know, we'll find out where everything goes from there. Justice League number 23 next week. So, you know, we'll make sure to take a look at that and see how they lead into Villains Month.
So, I was just wondering if it's going to be like one of those lull issues like Justice League of America is, but I'll find out when we get to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth, you know, since we've been keeping up with the crossover, it's worth the read.
Yeah. And I guess Justice League comes out next week and it ends, I think?
Yeah.
Yep, that's what the plan is.
And then the Crime Syndicate takes over, blah, blah, blah. Just what League of America's Vibe number 7, which I have not got to.
So yeah. This is one of those ones that I was talking about. I have not, like, I've heard you guys kind of mention it in past shows, and I heard some interview with the writer, I think, about a couple of weeks back, kind of interested in this book for some reason.
It's the young superhero teen trying to get acquainted with his powers. And he's
I really feel like it's a book that has a lot more promise than it's delivered on. I really wanted to enjoy it a lot more than I have when it started, and I don't know, something about it's just been off. And I think the only thing that I can really kind of pin down is that it feels like there's some end point he has to work towards. So there's a lot of stuff that's not really happening organically. It feels like, you know, magically he bumps into the person who's has the right skills for what they need to do next to get this character out of the prison. You know, I mean, there's just too many times where things are just kind of falling into place and it just feels too forced. Like they're trying to work up to Darkseid's daughter, and they're trying to work up to bridging the gap between Earth 1 and Earth 2. And like, to me, on the, you know, very superficial level, I'm interested in that type of stuff, but just not the way it's been playing out in this book.
And looking at the cover just reminded me that last issue, his brother was reintroduced, who I'm assuming is that Rupture that they're referring to. And I like that whack-ass quote that's on the bottom of the page. Introducing, what's it say, Rupture. He'll quake you to the core. Yeah, he'll quake you to the core. I think...
Womp, womp.
I think, like you said, the book had promise when it started. I remember reading all the interviews leading up to the book actually launching and how they were going to, you know, use Vibe as this, like, border patrol type person who's cutting down and capturing these creatures that are jumping over because he can sense them using his powers and whatnot. And that sounded cool. And he's done that, like, what, twice maybe since the book started?
Yeah, there was, like, one apocalypse monster and then the whole thing with Gypsy.
Yeah, I think the book could possibly do better once they get away from being tied to Argus.
Yeah. Well, I kind of feel the same way with Earth 2. Like, the whole idea of having the parallel Earth and the, you know, the Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman all got killed, so how is this world going to survive? And a dark side is, you know, attacking it. And, like, all of that sounded interesting, but just once it played out, you know, you read the first couple issues, and it's just like, I don't want to read this anymore. Like, I really liked the plot line, but the storyline sucks, you know?
And now they've already introduced a new Batman.
Yeah, he popped up in that Earth 2 annual. So.
Yeah, and it's not Bruce because he's dead, right?
Right.
So, but they like their legacy.
It's Ben Affleck.
They like their legacy characters in the DC. Okay. Next up, Legion of Superheroes number 23 is its final issue. Until it starts back over, not in November, or not October, but December, as Justice League 3000, because DC decided to change artists and then to push the release date back 2 months.
Well, and I don't know if you heard the latest rumor, but the latest rumor is that it's going to be an Earth 2 tie-in. So it won't be a continuation of this Legion of Superheroes. It's Justice League 3000, and it's going to be the Legion of Superheroes of Earth 2.
That actually makes sense. Instead of doing the future, showing the future of, you know, our main DC universe, or the future of alternate Earth, so then they can play up all the different characters.
You know, and again, it's one of those things that could be interesting. It just kind of, you have to wait and see how they play it out. I don't know.
Yeah, you know? I'll be reading it when it comes out. So I actually kind of at least before all the creative changes, I was excited for Justice League 3000. And actually, I don't know why the creative changes would sway me to not liking it, because it's not like I read many books from those three three individuals anyway. So I had no allegiances. Red Hood and the Outlaws number 23. I will read it this weekend and discuss it next week.
Are you going to write that down?
I will. I can go ahead and first mention that Arsenal looks stupid on the cover, and then the preview pages I've seen, he looks like Cable a la early 2000s.
I was going to say, this looks totally like a Liefeld type design.
Arsenal goes to war. I love how DC puts all these witty catchphrases on their covers. Arsenal goes to war.
What young blood character is that patterned after? I forget what his name is.
Shaft.
Oh, Shaft.
Shut your mouth.
You're damn right.
Superman Unchained number 3. I did read this today during lunch.
I read this. What'd you guys think?
Eh.
Did anyone think that the art was kind of messy and rushed?
And it's funny you brought that up because I kind of noticed the same thing. And it, what made it funnier is because I had just watched a YouTube video of Scott Williams inking a panel from issue 3.
From this book?
Yeah. It was. Okay. I thought someone had posted a YouTube video on, I think on Twitter, and I watched it. It was like a sped up. It was just a panel. It was just one image, and he was inking that Wraith. How you say his name?
Wraith.
But yeah, it didn't look as crisp as the previous two. It didn't look bad, but you could sort of tell a small, slight difference.
It just looked rushed. You know, like if anyone's been reading, like looking at Jim Lee's work, going back, you know, to the X-Men days. There's definitely you could definitely see when there's a rush and when the line work is kind of sparse, and even the blacks aren't spotted nearly as much. So, I kind of felt that, and it even distracted a little bit from the story. Not that there's that much of a story, to be perfectly honest. You know, I just thought that it was kind of distracting to the point where I kind of lost track of what was going on in the book, and I just kind of flipped through it, not really paying attention to what was going on. You know, so I kind of that was the gist of my review, which is I was actually disappointed that the art, you know, distracted me so much from the story that I really couldn't pay attention.
Yeah,
the layouts themselves seem kind of muddled too. Like, you know, just the layouts. Forget the finished artwork. You know,
if you look at Superman's face throughout the issue, by the time you get to the end of the book, he looks like a different person than the way he looks at the beginning of the book. And right. That's not a good trait to have in the book. My big problem with this story is that, you know, the government has this other alien fighter who's super powerful, super strong, has been working throughout history to solve all these crises. He may be stronger than Superman, or just maybe that he's better trained. They're not sure at this point in time, but he looks to at least be his equal for now. And yet somehow nobody's ever spotted him for 50 years. Like, there's never been a blurry photograph or a hint of this other guy, or people, when they first saw Superman, mistook it for this other guy who's all blue with a big red symbol on his chest. You know what I mean? It just kind of...
And when Darkseid came to conquer us, how come this guy didn't come help?
Right.
And I like that his disguise is putting on a hood over his head.
But he's still, like, crackling with energy and has fire leaping off his back. But he's got a hood over his head, so therefore that disguises him.
And it's just a hood. It's not like a jacket or anything. It's just a hood. Hoodie.
Yeah, this issue had problems.
Yeah, I don't know if I did. Like I said, it wasn't bad. It's like I said, I don't know if it's my dislike for Superman or not. So
this kind of felt like a pro wrestling twist, where it's like the guy who you thought was good all along has suddenly turned bad. It's just kind of like all along there was this guy here waiting, just nobody knew. You know, it was just a little
forget all the rest of the continuity that led up to this.
Right.
I will say that I like the twist that they didn't automatically start finding each other. Like, the guy, Wraith, was kind of cool to Batman. He's like, just Superman. Stay down, give them what they want. And then he was like, I'm glad we're going to be teaming up now. It's a shame I have to kill you later. It's like, wait, what? Man for you. That's y'all's hero.
That's funny.
Trinity of Sin, Pandora number 3. Trinity War Titan.
Which I tried to read and it lost me.
Oh.
I haven't read any of the Pandora tie-ins, except I read Pandora number 1. That was it.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's a female with her own book, though. Give it props.
Okay, so basically the storyline for the issue is that, you know, when she opened the box, she let loose envy and war and famine and, you know, whatever. And so now she has found a way to, I guess, kill them So she's going to hunt them down. And so she ends up like attacking Envy, and Envy is like this creepy looking old guy in a top hat, kind of like a maniacal Jack the Ripper midget. And she ends up shooting him and destroying him. And so then all the other sins are like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? And at the same time, it's like, well, if you could just shoot these things, why are we doing Trinity War? Like, why aren't you just using the Justice Leagues to track down all these things and destroy them? You know? I don't, again, this issue had issues.
Mm. Well, I know last issue she made, who's the immortal guy cry?
Vandal Savage?
Vandal Savage. She made him cry.
Really? Oh, my God.
Wonder Woman number 23. Have not read it.
I know Eclectic wants us to talk about this, but I haven't read it yet. Actually, wait, I did read this. Oh, it wasn't
good. I've read the last two issues. Haven't read this one yet.
I think it's because I don't remember reading the previous issue. Dirt, any thoughts on this?
I don't read it.
Okay.
See, this was the other book.
Okay.
Doesn't sound like, I don't know, I'm hearing good things that it might be halfway decent. I don't know, but I don't know too many people are reading it.
Give it a shot. Eclectic's reading it, so...
You say you haven't read too much DC, right?
That is correct.
Just read read Batman.
Not a Bat fan?
I mean, I am to a point, but, you know, it's the Batman. I think we, you know, like... The only Batman book I've read in recent history was the book when Damian died, and that's because of reasons. But
because of important reasons.
Yeah. Anything like that coming along, you know, you gotta see what they do with it. But outside of that, not so much.
Yeah, that was the only issue of Batman Inc. I'd ever read, and I think I only read the next issue, and that was it. Fuck that series. That's it for DC. Dynamite Entertainment. Anyone read any Dynamite stuff?
Wait, you missed one.
World of Warcraft?
No, Supergirl.
Oh, where is that? Oh, yeah, there it is. Tucked underneath Red Hood and the Outlaws and Superman Unchained. Supergirl number 23.
Michael Alan Nelson, who I loved his work on 28 Days Later. He took those horror movies and made a comic book series about it. That was actually very well done. It was 20, I think, four issues, and it was one long, ongoing arc. And it was one of those that, like, I only started reading it just because I was like, I'll go for another zombie thing. Why not? And it was great. So when I saw he was going to be getting into, Supergirl, I definitely wanted to check it out. And what he's done is he's brought in the old Cyborg Superman character into the New 52, tying it into Brainiac and his story. And in this particular issue, Kara has stumbled upon – she got kryptonite poisoning, and so she left Earth, trying to find a cure or whatever. And she stumbled upon this collective that basically finds worlds that are dying – or like the last remaining survivor of a world or whatever, uses their memories and tries to recreate them. But it seems like this grand, noble effort that they're doing, but what she doesn't realize is that they actually like assimilate the person and destroy them in order to build their recreation. And of course they find her and they figure she's the last person of Krypton. And so they're, trying to assimilate her and destroy her in order to, rebuild it. And as part of this, the cyborg Superman,
Superman. Well, because resistance is futile after all.
The cyborg Superman is basically a trick being played by Brainiac. In the old, DC universe, he was an astronaut who, his wife died. Superman didn't save his wife, and he got this, radiation poisoning, whatever, and it led to him becoming this robotic Superman in order to have his revenge, whatever. Well, in here, the look of that is Brainiac trying to create his own Superman to destroy Superman with, basically. So there's a lot of new concepts coming to some of these old characters, which is one of the things I was looking forward to in the New 52. And one of the things that I enjoy about it is making these, you know, kind of crummy characters really into something different and something a little more interesting. And so I really enjoyed this issue.
Actually, last night I read some news on the Cyborg Superman Villains Month issue and some revelation with that.
Did they tell you who he really was?
Yes.
Okay, because that happens at the end of this book. I didn't know if it mentioned that in the solicits. So that apparently he is Kara's father, according to the end of this issue, Zor-El.
And, does he chop him over hand?
He was kidnapped by Brainiac, and his memories were wiped as he was turned into this Kryptonian, you know, monster. You know, you have the whole Bottled City of Kandor thing. Her family was part of the, you know, the attack, the bottling. I don't know what you want to call it, the fermenting process of saving that bottled city. And so apparently he was the one chosen by Brainiac, but he had no memory of who he was until he gets restored in this issue. So again, it's concepts that were never a part of the old DC universe being merged, you know, into this. And I, that's what I want out of the New 52, is to see some new, cool, interesting stuff. And so, so I really enjoyed this. The end.
So are you enjoying? So you've been reading Supergirl, I take it.
Yeah, off and on. I mean, I've read them all, but I kind of read them in spurts where I read, you know, the first arc probably as it came out and then kind of waited for a couple issues to build up and then sat down and read them at once. And now I'm kind of back into the mode of reading them as they come out.
Okay. So that's it for DC.
Now you may move on.
Anyone read Dynamite? Going once, going twice? No. IDW had a couple stuff out. They had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles micro series number 5 for Karai. I think that's how you pronounce her name.
Oh, where is that? I know it's here somewhere. Oh, wait.
There's some My Little Pony out there. Kiss Kids number 1.
Yeah, I was going to go back. I noticed the Kiss Kids. Saw some people looking like they were excited for that.
No Judge Dredd people here?
Nope.
Nah, we want to rock and roll all night and party every day with the Kiss Kids.
Yeah, Judge Dredd number 10 is out. Are you a Judge Dredd fan, Roddy Cat?
The original movie was let's say something to behold. But outside of that, no.
Alright.
So
is anybody reading the Turtles stuff?
Here and there, off and on.
I'm reading Cityfall. I haven't read any of the micro series yet. I need to, I know.
Like, I'm way behind. I'm on, like, issue 8 or something like that. I'm so far back on it. You know, one thing that came out last week was the regular first issue, but this week the subscription variant cover actually shipped was for Thunder Agents number 1. Did you guys talk about this last week?
It was something that I think we wanted to get to. But
I did read Thunder. I shouldn't say I read Thunder Agents last week. I skipped through Thunder Agents last week. Or this weekend.
I actually enjoyed it. I found myself liking it a lot more than I thought I was going to. It was one of those things I just kind of read, I don't know if I want to say out of pity, but, you know, as I was going through the books, I was like, oh, I'll give this one a shot. Why not? And I read it, and I was like, that was actually a lot more entertaining than I expected. So I'm definitely going to stick with that, at least for the next couple issues, and see where it goes.
Okay. Yeah, I need to get into the micro series, at least for Turtles.
What about animated?
I don't mess with the animated ones.
You're not watching the cartoon?
I tried to, and I at least need to. I know they're on Hulu Plus, so since I have my free 2 month subscription going, I need to catch up on there. And so now we're done with IDW. Into Image, which I haven't read any Image this week, but I plan on it. I do want to mention, let's see, Bounce number 4. That was a series.
I've read that one.
Oh, I gave up on after issue 2, but what do you say?
I mean, the world is relatively interesting because of what it's steeped in. It's basically steeped in the real world and, you know, basically superhumans, metahumans, whatever you want, uniques, I guess, as they might be trying to call them, just started happening. And it's a pretty new place, new universe, if you want to go that far with it, for them. It's so far, it's not bad. I will say that. I mean, the art is pretty good. The story it has some interesting ties in it. I kind of want to see where it gets to, particularly with why the main, I guess, the main, I guess he's the villain, is doing what he's doing. But yeah, like I said, it's still kind of keeps my interest so far. You know, I got to do my 6, so. I'm 6 issues. If it goes on past, if it doesn't pick up anywhere after that, then I might drop it.
But so this is 5 or 4?
Yeah, it's 4.
Okay. Next up is, what do I want to mention? Thief of Thieves number 16. My plan is to go back and read these, at least as much as I can, because I've heard so much good stuff about it, I want to give it a try.
I thought the same thing, so I went back and read issue 1, and I was like, oh, that's all right, and then never got around to reading beyond that.
It's very possible I'll do the same thing. I went back and read Ghosted 1 and 2, so that's the reason I'm, even though they're probably different, but it's still like heist type thing. So, and I like Ghosted, so we'll see. And that's it for Image. On to Marvel. Which gets some applause. Stuff I've read. Avengers number 18, Infinity tie-in.
This is the real Infinity tie-in.
Yep, they get into it.
So yes, this is the Infinity tie-in. It shows the Galactic Council gathering their forces together to plan an assault against the Builders. And it doesn't, of course, doesn't go as planned, and we have to. I don't know what to think about Infinity. At least the tie-in issue, like the main. When I say the tie-ins, I mean Avengers and New Avengers, because those are the only ones that matter. Because so this happens, and then I'm assuming New Avengers is going to show what's going on Earth. So when Infinity number 2 comes out, where is the story going to pick up? Half the Avengers team in space is already like stranded, flown in space.
Yeah, I think there was a piece on CBR with Tom Brevoort. Is he the editor in chief now? But he's definitely the editor for the story in his line.
He's an Avengers editor,
right? And Hickman, the writer. I think they both lamented that the limited series isn't exactly standalone, that you kind of have to pick up Avengers and New Avengers to fill in the story, to actually be able to read it and make sense of what's going on. So, you know, I think they've already come out with kind of a mea culpa on that and just taking blame for, you know, that being the case, that they can't, you know, that readers literally can't just pick up the limited series. With regards to this issue, you know, I enjoyed it. You know, I'm a fan of Lionel FU's art. I thought it was pretty good in this. The space action was pretty good. The story, I mean, it's really you know, epic space battles, the likes that we haven't seen probably since Annihilation. you know, the Advent Landing limited series. You know, it's actually been a number of years since then.
Yeah,
so I actually liked it.
So I had thought about reviewing this, but I haven't been feeling too well this week, so.
This book is also still proving why in the world Cannonball and Sunspot are on Avengers.
So they both can try to mech on Smasher, that's why.
Apparently.
Who I say still isn't getting enough camera time. Smasher.
I got it from that during Infinity that might change, mm-hmm. I would hope.
Hopefully they don't get killed. Cannon fodder.
So.
Yeah, right?
Next up, Avengers Assemble number 18.
Oh, wait. One last thing about this. I kind of thought it was funny that they brought a Hulk on a spaceship.
Yeah, that was a pretty smart idea.
I understand the whole assembling of the team to go into space and stay behind from the Infinity, which came out, what's it, last week. So Iron Man, who has been adventuring off in space recently, we'll pick him to stay on Earth, and we'll send Captain America to go into space, lead the team in space.
Yeah, the guy who wears a suit of armor that can survive easily in the depths of space better stay on Earth, whereas the other guy who will last about 3 seconds if he doesn't have, you know, some sort of special equipment with him, he's the one that we're going to choose to lead the team.
Also has remote control armor that he had been using.
So yeah, there could have been two of him going into battle.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That but, mix. You know, it's Cap after all.
But then,
you know, Cap is the one that has the, you know, he's got the respect of all these intergalactic leaders, man. It's Cap.
The only way I talked myself into it was, I guess Iron Man would be best equipped to rally all, like, whatever, the Earth's forces together.
Would he?
A strategy. The way they explained, the way they worded it in Infinity Number One, it's like
wouldn't Captain America be the guy who would be the one who could rally everybody, that would have the tactical mind to move the troops around and know how to police correctly and respond correctly?
No, but if you think about it, I mean, you know, it's at the end of the day, this is a combat expeditionary force. And, you know, they left Stark behind, I guess, to marshal defenses, like actual, you know, technical defenses, just in case, you know, things, you know, hit the fan. So that, I think that's what Tim, and I think that's what Hickman was getting at when they, you know, when they divided up the forces like this. And right. At the end of the day, I think the majority of the new Avengers characters are on Earth. Am I wrong?
No, they are.
Right, but, so I think that's where the division came. You know, that's where the logical storyline, you know, like story reasons to have Cap go into space came in.
I'm calling Hickman mumbo jumbo on this.
Actually, the mumbo jumbo makes sense to me now, so I don't mind it. And that's plus, it just the way they split it up just made for convenient story purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Cap was going to be field leader anyway. He historically always has been. Right. You know, so that was going to be the case, I think. You know, he'll do one of his patented speeches when the chips get down, and, you know, then things will turn back around.
Okay. Avengers Assemble 18, which
is a little sleepy. <right? Yeah.
laughs> We're keeping Tim from his bedtime.
Yeah.
Told you, it's been a long day. Avengers Assemble number 18, which...
That's what the mute button is for, dude.
I didn't feel like reaching for it. Which was another Infinity tie-in and told the same story from Avengers, except from the point of view of Spider-Woman, who had been captured by the Skrulls years ago.
And you would think, would not even want to be out in space, but that's that.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah.
And the thing was, like, I couldn't help but when I was reading through this, this just felt like a bad recreation of Avengers. Like, I didn't think the story was as strong. The artwork was nowhere near as strong. You know, it's just like this was like the Bollywood version of the story.
Yeah.
That's a good one. You know, at least it's not the, at least it's not the porn parody.
You know, since Kelly Sue DeConnick has been riding Captain Marvel and Spider-Woman recently, so we'll focus on her this time. And then Captain Marvel, I think, comes out next week, so we'll deal with her, show her side of things.
I mean, there were kind of a bunch of cool moments in this issue, but I have to agree with Dirt on this, that, you know, it was an inferior product compared to the Avengers issue. And, you know, actually, I was misremembering a little bit of the Hulk bits, but you know, because they actually show, well, why on earth would you bring a Hulk in a little spaceship? you know, what good is he in a space battle? But I guess it's always nice to have a Hulk around.
Hey, gotta have your big guns, I guess.
Yeah.
Cable and X-Force number 13. I read it as
what'd
I
you think?
And want to do.
What you think?
It was fine.
There's a lot of revelations in this, no?
Yeah, they explained the whole Cable and his visions and how they're coming about and leading up to a confrontation with the Uncanny Avengers. I like X-Force books, so, well, except for Uncanny, which I'm starting not to enjoy as much. But
because it's going away from what needs to make it good.
Yeah, which, I mean, they had to get away from that. But anyway, this reminds me of old school Cable and X-Force, or old school Cable and X-Force, no pun intended. So I'm enjoying it for that reason, and I enjoy the art from Salvador LaRocca. And I actually can see, I mean, I haven't actually asked many people if they're enjoying this book or not, but I could see why people probably couldn't give two shits about this book, but I'm enjoying it.
I tolerate it because it definitely has a couple of characters that I like reading about, you know, Colossus and even Forge. I'm glad that they brought Forge back and they kind of reclaimed him from the Astonishing X-Men hell that he was sent to for a while there. You know, this book actually had some split art duties. It was Sal LaRocca and I want to see who this is, Gerardo Sandoval. And if you go through the book, you can actually spot where Sandoval takes over for a bunch of pages, and his art actually is very Madureira. It's reminiscent of Joe Madureira, Joe Madureira's style.
It actually looks like Roger Cruz. I don't know if anyone.
Yeah, but Roger Cruz used to ape everybody. That's the thing. That was not Roger Cruz.
It looked more Roger Cruz than Madureira.
There's a couple of real Madureira looking faces here. But anyway, I mean, the point is it was very reminiscent of somebody else's style. And I had a question for you, Tim, since my memories on Cable and X-Force in general are kind of dim. Is that the scimitar or the scimitar at the end of the book that they show that
blacksmith? Oh, yeah, Cable had that for a while, didn't he?
Right, that blacksmith gives to Hope.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was. Help him
focus his powers.
I didn't know what that was at the end, but that makes sense now.
Yeah, I think that's what that used. I think that's what that is. It just looks a little different. So,
didn't he have that in the Cable and Deadpool book?
I think so. Like I said, my recollection, I guess, isn't as dim as I thought.
I mean, I have blank periods when I stop reading, so.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think that's what that is. So, you know, they'll probably explain it more because this was the cliffhanger part of the story, so they'll probably explain it in the next issue.
Say something, Dirt, so we can see that image.
Here's something, and I'm saying something so
there it is. You can
see this image.
Yeah.
So there's something.
Okay. Makes total sense now.
Total sense?
As much as a Cable tidbit cam, right?
Daredevil number 30.
This was a fun but weird story.
Have not read yet.
I like that. I'm not going to spoil too much, but you know, obviously on the cover you can see who the guest star is. And what I don't like about this is that he's a guest star in Daredevil. Why the hell isn't he in Infinity?
You got to read the Infinity.
Oh, for real?
When you buy Infinity, it's got that code that you can type in to unlock the Comixology, digital copy. Well, when you do that, it unlocks one of the Infinite comics. which shows Silver Surfer and what's going on with him during the
whole story. Yeah, and if you bought the digital copy of Infinity Number 1, it's at the back of it.
Yeah.
Oh, damn the digital copy!
Or you just go buy it individually.
Yeah, I think you can buy it for 99 cents, can't you?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, I guess I'm going to have to track that down and find out why Silver Surfer isn't involved. But, you know, thanks for the heads up, you know. But, you know, I like this issue because it was kind of a fun done-in-one type thing. And those are always nice to kind of cleanse the palate after, like, a long, drawn-out crossover. Or at least a long, drawn-out storyline in Daredevil. So it was kind of fun to read in that sense. And there's a couple of really good scenes in there between Daredevil and the Silver Surfer.
Going back to the Silver Surfer thing, he is around in Infinity. They didn't specifically say anything about him earlier, but in Infinity 2, they did mention something about pretty much where he was, which you will see in the Infinite comic, but they don't really say anything about him. They just mention a place that he happened to be in.
Okay. Gotcha.
Indestructible Hulk number 12, continuing the Agent of Time story.
Yeah, this wasn't the strongest book.
Yeah, it was okay. It was there.
I mean, it's more time travel BS.
Yeah, and I guess supposedly he's going to get to the point where he goes back to when the gamma bomb goes off and he's created, I think. I think that's where it's leading to.
It's not the first time they've done that, you know? Hello, Hulk Future Imperfect. I mean, you know, not that that exactly happened, Hulk Future Imperfect, but still. No, don't tell me you didn't read that, Tim.
What? No, of course I didn't.
Now put that on your list. Hulk Future Imperfect. Peter David and George Perez.
That's the one where... the old Hulk with the
Maestro
beard and stuff. Yes. Yeah, Maestro.
Read that. You should definitely put that on your reading list. What do you guys say?
They haven't read it either.
It was a good story. I mean, it was two, like, deluxe issues. So there was, like, what, $5.99 back in the day? It was the cardstock cover, what, 60 pages or something like that. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to be reading a 12-volume series or anything like that, but it was a fun... I remember the big thing about that book was he's got like a trophy room. Every time he beats a hero, he keeps some sort of trophy. So you see this big like 2-page spread of the trophy room. And I remember everybody sitting there for like 2 weeks kind of mapping out the trophy room. Like that was Captain America. That was Nova. There's Spider-Man. That's Wolverine. Who's that? Oh, that's Pacepot Pete. All right. There's that, you know.
Yeah, that's a George Perez specialty, too. Like, he was throwing all sorts of stuff in there.
Yeah, lots of detail.
Yeah, so definitely put that on your list. Roddycat, did you read it?
Oh, no.
No?
What?
No.
Wow. You should put that on your list, too. Hulk Future Imperfect.
All right, we'll do it.
See if it's on the Marvel Unlimited app.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Let's see.
Wait, is that Two-Gun Kid on the cover of that?
It sure is.
It is.
Yes.
And Rawhide Kid and
some other kid.
They've been doing some weird pulls in Marvel as of late. Pretty good though.
Oh, and at the end of the issue, we get a Black Knight and some other characters from Camelot times.
Merlin.
Yeah. Nova number 7, which I want to talk about. I'm not sure why. Well, okay. Three things just popped in my head to talk about. One, Josh Whedon makes an appearance in this.
What?
I want to get a prize.
I read the stupid thing. I didn't pick that up.
That director.
Is yeah, that but Josh, I didn't know.
It looks like Josh Whedon to me.
What is he doing?
It's a movie... Nova tries to break up a crime, but it's actually a movie being filmed, and like the director's like yelling at him, and And he's like, hey, wait a minute. You'd be perfect. And then, Nova flies away. He's like, sorry, never mind.
I didn't pick up on that. I did not pick up on that. The likeness isn't that strong, but I guess you could say it is, yeah.
It must have, to me, it must have been really strong for me to notice it. Because usually that stuff is oblivious to me. So that's one. We also had a New Warriors appearance from Justice and Speedball. Hopefully they'll stick around. And let's see. He also met Superior Spider-Man, who Zeb Wells wrote way over the top, which is odd because he didn't write him in Avenging Spider-Man.
Well, that was regular Peter, yeah.
Yeah, that was regular Peter. Yeah, he was. I mean, there was a couple of funny lines, but it seemed like Doc Ock was overly obnoxious compared to how he is in his own book.
Well, and that's one of those things. It's kind of like the writer puts their own slant on it. If you go back to Civil War, depending on who was writing it, either Captain America was just this naive idiot, or Iron Man was this overbearing a-hole. You know, it's just whoever's writing it is going to put their spin on the character. And this guy, I'm guessing he really liked Peter Parker and liked doing Avenging Spider-Man, and they made it into Doc Ock and got a different writer, and now he's pissed off. So this was his chance to take a knock at Doc Ock.
But here's the thing. I'm not a fan of this, but I think the gist of any writer who's going to take on the Superior Spider-Man as a character has to maintain that, you know, if you could punch Doc Ock in the face, you would do it. And every time I read something that he says, I want to punch him in the face, and that works. You know, that's how I read this. Like, every time I read him saying something or doing something, I want to punch him in the face.
But his version of Spider-Man is the best that they've done in 40 years.
I mean, No, he's talking about Slot.
Yeah.
Just this version, the superior version.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying it, but like I said, what I get, the kick I get out of it is that I want to punch him in the face every time he does something. Like, if I could reach into the screen or reach through the page,
I'd punch him in the face. You like punching people in the face. I mean, that's where you come from to begin with.
And the last thing I'll say about this issue is I'm not sure what this Nova book is supposed to be about. And the reason I say that is because, like, he goes around trying to figure out, you know, how to be a hero and stopping crimes, and he's bumbling around, and it's like
it's vibe, except, you know, not as crazy looking or involved with like dimension stuff. It's just him flying around with a bucket on his head. So, you know, like,
get this thing moving already. So I that was a complaint of mine with Guardians of the Galaxy too. It's like they keep telling us Guardians of the Galaxy and Nova are really important because they're going to be in movies.
And nothing's happening.
Yeah, nothing's happening.
I'm still liking Guardians. I'm wondering why they're not in. No, it's not. I'm wondering why they are not tied to Infinity, or maybe there's a tie-in that hasn't been said anything about, but it seemed like they should be in. They should be there.
Yeah, next issue of Nova ties into Infinity, so maybe business will start picking up, as Jim Ross would say. All right.
As he would say.
Superior Spider-Man number 16.
Speaking of a book I keep buying and not reading.
You should read it. You might want to punch him in the face.
Oh, I've been wanting to do that since... I mean, I've read the first 10, and then I've just been getting them, and I was thinking about getting rid of it. But, yeah, I'm going to catch up before I make that decision.
This is a book, like every issue of this, Marvel gives us a review copy ahead of time that I can read online. I read it, you know, week and a half before it comes out, and yet I still buy the paper copy when it comes out. I love this book. And you know, Dan Slott, I'm not a big fan of Dan Slott in general. And he's actually yelled at me on Twitter a couple times, which is hilarious.
As he wants to do.
yet I still love this book. I love the character. I really enjoy it, and I've not been this big a fan of Spider-Man in a long time.
Yeah, as Dork Geekus on Twitter refers to him as that writer or DS because he doesn't want to say his name. he's been yelled at him before, I believe.
No kidding.
The guy does not take an ounce of criticism.
Yeah.
I think he was like tailor-made for Twitter because he's just soaking up all the hate.
Just to go off on a Dan Slott tangent, there was a story several years ago where he was saying that piracy is killing comics, and they canceled She-Hulk. And he said, you know, sales just weren't high because everybody's pirating. Everybody's going to download it. They're not going to buy a copy of it.
No one's pirating She-Hulk.
But then people started digging around, and they found that he had an account at the Pirate Bay, and he was downloading anime like there was no tomorrow. And they go, well, gee, Dan, couldn't you buy these? You can import them and, you know, get a region-free DVD player and support the anime that you like. Instead of pirating it, you're going to kill it. And he was like, well, no, that's different because that's video. That's not a comic. It's like, what? Like, what are you even talking about? So ever since then, I've always had kind of like a Dan shield. And
listen, plus, I've met Slott a number of times. I've even seen him on the streets of Manhattan. And like the last time I saw him was at New York Comic Con. It was right before Superior Spider-Man stuff dropped. And I remember like shouting after him, like, yo, you better find a place to hide. And he's like, yeah, man, because I'm like 5 feet taller than this guy.
Yeah, he looks like a short little guy.
Was he eating a cheeseburger?
No. He was walking, you know, like on the show floor, and you know, most people just aren't smart enough to recognize him from the pictures. But I've seen him a number of times, and I can only imagine, you know, the fear he must have sometimes when he's walking on you know.
I mean, on I remember coffee. Hearing. I remember I didn't know he was the writer of She-Hulk at the time. I remember whatever back when that book was out, hearing good things about it. But I mean, really, who's trying to torrent She-Hulk?
Well, apparently everybody, because they weren't buying it, and that was the only reason why.
Yeah,
guess so.
So, fun fact: this was the lead up to the Superior Spider-Man stuff was pretty much what got me back into comics recently.
Okay.
Which is weird because I'm dropping the book that's kind of – well, I might think about dropping the book that's got get me back in here. But that's interesting. I think what I wanted to ask you guys was, do you think they're trying to get rid of Peter? Like just pretty much get him out of continuity? Because I've noticed a couple of theories about that because with the whole brainwash, like we know, you know, comics death is not – doesn't really stay permanent for a whole lot of people, but the way they've been kind of kicking around Charles Xavier, you know, and he's pretty much been written out of the X-Books, and with, you know, Miles Morales coming into 616 supposedly, and Peter's now gone, you think they're just trying to get rid of some of their characters that they really can't do anything with, seemingly?
No. The only reason I say that is because these characters are such institutions that they'll never age and never die.
True.
I kind of see it the same way as the whole death of Superman and when they broke Batman's back type of thing, where they did it and it was a big event that got a lot of people's eyes on stuff. So they're just playing it out until it runs itself out, and then they'll go back. Like, there's no plans now for it to ever go back to Peter, but when the market takes its next shift and people don't care as much anymore and they need to revitalize the character, then they'll go back to it. Like, because the whole Death of Superman thing was only supposed to last like 4 to 6 issues. And it ended up being this big 2-year storyline because it kept selling books and people were interested. So I think that's kind of the thing. It's like, okay, we're going to shake things up with Spider-Man. And then when people don't care about it, we'll shake things back to where they were. And so I think they're kind of, they're hands off on Peter right now for the time being, only because they don't want people to give up on this version of the character because they think the other version is coming back. I think that's the only reason why you see that type of thing.
I agree with that. I think that's probably the closest to how they're actually playing this right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious to see what they do with Miles Morales, though. I'm not happy that they're going that if in fact what they do is fold the Ultimate Universe into the Marvel U proper, the 616, and they totally screw up Miles Morales doing that, I'm not going to be happy with that at all. You know, I enjoy the Miles Morales character the way it is and how he's come up in the Ultimate U, and they should keep him there and keep developing that character there. That's my opinion.
Interesting. That's my train of thought. I was going to say something about Superior. Oh, so Spider-Man 2099 shows up in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And Ryan Stickman finally comes back. So all I care about.
Actually, I think that preview of 2099 may be up.
Oh, I see Mighty Avengers is up already.
Yeah. I didn't take it though.
And actually, the preview pages from Greg Land didn't look too bad. I thought it was.
Oh, it's Greg Land.
Yeah. Oh.
Let's see. What
like, I will take. Listen, I will take rushed Jim Lee pages that make me that distract me from the story over anything Craig Lane does. Oh my goodness.
Nope, there's no. The next issue of Superior is not in here, but there is Battle of the Atom 1 and Infinity number 2.
Ooh.
There's Mighty Avengers number 1.
Yeah, you know what to do at the end of the show.
There you go.
Actually, those are for the week after. I've got the next week ones actually to send you.
I can say that. So those are Battle of Atom and Infinity 2 for 2 weeks from now, right?
Yeah. What I'm working on now is what do we got? Thanos Rising, Astonishing X-Men, A plus X, Next Avengers Arena, Captain America, Deadpool 15, FF 11, New Avengers 9, Scarlet Spider 21. I think there's some X-Men books in there. Uncanny
Avengers in there?
Uncanny Avengers, and there was something X-Men in there.
It's funny, like, I'll always go on, like, the weekly list to see, like, what books come out. And when I get to Marvel, I always try to, like, guess which preview books will be out. And, I've noticed the pattern, which, you know, pretty accurate. Avengers is always on there. Superior is always on there. Thor, New Avengers.
Yeah, although it's all done through Marvel's online digital system, so it's always kind of, like, janky.
Yeah.
There was the 1 week where all the preview books were books that were, like, 12 years old.
Yeah, you showed me the screenshot of that. It was stuff from pre-Marvel Now. It was, like, right before it ended, or right before they launched Marvel Now. Because I remember it was, like, Uncanny X-Men something, 2 something. Anyway.
Yeah, it was like the Vampire Jubilee X-Men series. And,
yeah.
Dark Avengers. And there may have been a Secret War issue in there. I'm not sure. But...
pulling the curtain back behind Comic Book Chronicles.
Anyway, moving on.
Thunderbolts number 14, which I enjoyed.
I thought it was funny. It's an Infinity tie-in by cover and a happenstance only. It doesn't have all that much to do with Infinity at all.
Well, because they haven't got in, because Infinity hasn't started on Earth yet. At least the Earth part hasn't taken place yet. I had stopped reading Thunderbolts when it launched because it wasn't good. But they changed writers, and now Charles Soule is, I think that's how you say his name.
I think it's Soule.
Yeah, but I think it's Soule. Yeah, I heard that on another podcast. That's the reason I hesitated. Charles Soule is writer now. And I was like, okay. I heard good things about him. I actually had never read a Charles Soule book before, but since people seemed to like him online, I was like, okay, I'll give this a try since I was initially interested with Thunderbolts when it launched. And once he got through the last two issues of wrapping up previous story arcs, like, this is a good jumping on point for Thunderbolts. And it delivered. It was funny. The new artist on there is some guy's name I don't remember, Jeff Day something or another.
Paolo.
He's good. They got rid of Steve Dillon, who, you know, his mannequin-looking characters.
You mean, were they all the same face?
Yeah, everyone's got the same face and facial expressions. Everybody pop right there. But Sol, yeah, this was fun.
Sol is actually one of the few guys doing double duty DC and Marvel. Mm-hmm. He's doing Red Matt Lanterns and Swamp Thing.
Him and Matt Kent.
Yeah.
So yeah, for people that may have been interested in Thunderbolts, I suggest this book.
Good. I'm gonna check it out then, just to see.
Yeah, you may not like it, but I did. Ultimate Comics, the Ultimates number 29.
Woohoo! Yay!
Some stuff happens in this issue, man.
Man, I love this series. Which is odd, because...
Why so?
Well, for one, I just recently started reading Ultimate books. Start with Ultimate Spidey, of course, once Miles came on, but of course, there's only three Ultimate books anyway, but I haven't been paying attention to Ultimates, what had been going on in there. And the only reason I started reading is because they changed writers, and Josh Hale, was it Josh?
Joshua Hale Fielkoff.
Thank you. He came on as writer, and again, heard much good things about him, so I was like, cool, I'll read this. And man, he's doing a lot with this book.
One of the things that I like about it is that, you know, growing up reading the What If books, every What If storyline from Marvel in the 80s was always like, the end of the world happens because of whatever. You know, every single issue, it seemed like everybody died, everything crumbled, and a couple people survived, and that was it.
Look at What If AVX.
And then in Ultimates, I mean, that's kind of what's happening. It's like the whole world is crumbling, and because it is, you know, the Ultimate Universe, and because they are folding the whole thing at the end of the year, like, they're not afraid to kill off characters. They're not afraid to, you know, take a heel turn for some of these people in the middle of the story. They do crazy stuff, like Reed Richards, because he can stretch. He's made himself stretch himself into, like, four versions of himself. So he's kind of like a Hydra, where he moves around, and he's got, like, four or five different bodies and heads kind of all working at the same time, and just crazy stuff that you wouldn't – I don't think you would ever see in the regular Marvel Universe. But it's also just really well-constructed. Like, this particular issue, you can see Quicksilver on the cover there. There's kind of a focus on him, and he's been – a secondary character, you know, for the last, couple of years, whatever. I think the way he's always been? Yeah, well, you know, he's B character. What are you going to do? He's a Flash without a face mask. But,
color scheme.
They put this story around him, and it's actually a well done story. It's a well written character, and you come to kind of care about the character, and then he dies. Like, spoiler, Quicksilver is dead at the end of this issue. And it's the Ultimate Universe, so, I mean, does it really matter? You know, whatever. But it's well written. It's well crafted. It does everything it's supposed to do, so that when you get to that point, you actually kind of feel bad about the fact that this happened to him. And, you know, but at the same time, it moves along the story of Reed Richards being so smart he becomes insane. You know, he becomes the criminal mastermind because he thinks he's so much smarter than everybody else. And everybody else is kind of rising up to take him on. So, you know, it hits those kind of what if from the 80s beats where these characters are dying and people are turning bad and the stuff that you never thought would happen happens. But it has weight to it. It feels like real characters. It feels like the story matters, at least for this universe. And so I think that's part of the reason why I just enjoy it so much.
Yeah, and the what if tie is actually pretty apt, because there have been some what ifs that actually have come back into the universe in one way, shape, or form. Like the Ultimates in itself, the group the Ultimates in itself, was, if I remember, seeing a what if S.H.I.E.L.D. started the Avengers.
Mm. Well, and that's like with Spider-Girl.
Become presidents. President.
Well, and like Spider-Girl was a what-if story that became its own series. It was the M2 universe that it went like 90 issues or something crazy like that. So,
yeah.
So what-ifs, you know, sometimes they do matter.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a concept that sometimes catches fire and, you know, catches attention.
But yeah, I just think Ultimate X-Men is a little harder to get into. That's one that you really have to go back farther because it's been so layered. Brian Wood is writing that one, so he has a tendency to do things a lot deeper. Yeah, so that's a little harder to jump right into that one.
Couldn't get into it.
Yeah.
Which is shocking for me in the X-Men book. Speaking of him, we'll get to him later. Venom number 39, which we announced, of course, is going to be canceled. And
right, so
it introduced the Mania symbiote. Flash Thompson.
Flash
creates her when he tries to get the symbiote to protect one of his students at the high school. I forget her name. But so I guess we'll see how this series ends. And there's the question if it gets relaunched as a Marvel Now Wave 2 book.
It's also
currently the longest running Marvel book. Which is
that's scary.
People are wondering if that's the reason they're canceling it.
That's scary.
It's getting close to 50 issues. Got to cancel it.
Jeez.
Yeah, but how long until Marvel starts going back to doing the crazy number thing where
they're picked back up with what?
Superior Spider-Man is 24 issues, so now the next issue is 725. You know, Thor is now suddenly going to be 849 because we're going to count every miniseries he's ever been in.
Yeah. I predict in 2 years. Just to answer your question. It's Factor 261.
I flipped through this. It's Peter David wrapping up the X-Factor story post Guido, spoiler alert, becoming the king of hell. As funny as that sounds, that just sounds like a joke just from what I just said, right? you know, it's Peter David wrapping up this story, and he's basically addressing one or two characters at a time. And I believe the next issue is the last one, so it's kind of hard. This is definitely not a standalone issue. This is definitely not something that you're going to pick up on a whim and look at and be like, oh, you know, this is fun. This is definitely wrapping up, you know, dangling plot lines and telling, sort of like kind of wrapping up things so that the toys are put back in the box, the toy box. So, at the end of the day, this is just that. It's wrapping up a couple of stories, and we have one more issue left before this particular run of X-Factor ends.
Okay. X-Men number 4.
I like this issue. Anybody?
Standalone issue before Battle of the Atom ramps up.
What do you think, Roddy Cat?
It was a pretty good issue for what it was. Like Tim said, it was a standalone issue. It had the little touching moments with Jubilee and a slightly weird looking Wolverine. Wait, did I just say that? And Jubilee, which is kind of funny because they kind of go back to Jubilee. Well, they kind of hint back upon Jubilee's origin, which I actually remember reading and having a copy of somewhere.
Yep, same here.
Yeah, but it was a pretty good book. It kind of touched on the end of, the end of the last arc again, or the end of the first arc, which I still have no idea what happened to John Sublime because it was touched on just in this book, but never really. You don't see it. You didn't see anything. Mm-hmm.
Sublime's gone.
Or that's the theory, or that's the movement. And Archaea's, I guess, still around, but they didn't touch on that any.
So, dangling plot points to be picked up later.
Yeah, pretty much. But overall, this was a pretty good read. Mm-hmm. I liked it. It kind of gave me some backstory and some stuff that I really didn't know about. Like, I knew Jubilee was a vampire. I couldn't understand how in the world she can be in the sun like she has been, but I guess that was kind of touched upon in this book.
Mm-hmm. It made me nostalgic, when they mentioned Jubilee's first appearance and, in the mall. I remember that issue so well.
Yep.
you know, M Squad and that whole thing. I thought that was very, very cool. There's a couple of things. There's one plot point in this issue that I had issues with, and spoiler alert, I had, you know, it kind of took me out of, you know, my reverie, my kind of, you know, nostalgia trip. It's a plane that they're trying to rescue, right? Yes. Why on earth doesn't Storm just throw some winds underneath it to float it so that it can make it to the next, you know, stop?
Yeah, really?
Hello, we have to go through this whole thing with telekinetic grappling hooks? Oh, come on, really?
And what's up with Rogue's powers? I mean, I'm a little out of loop on that one. Does she not have her strength?
She doesn't have the Carol Denver. You know, she doesn't have the okay. Marvel powers anymore. She just has her original powers.
Okay.
Dork Geekus on Twitter says the Rachel Aurora beef seemed odd. Yeah, I thought the same thing too from last issue.
I mean, it was something that was going to come up, I guess, given the way things quote unquote ended. But yeah, it was. It was still seemed to be taken a little bit farther than what it needed to be. I think they probably did that just to kind of have another subplot to this issue, right, as opposed to just the Wolverine Jubilee stuff.
Right. One thing I liked is, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
One thing I liked was that they kind of addressed that this is becoming an unofficial, official X-Men team.
Yeah,
you know, they address it right at the beginning where, you know, we're all sort of like, why are these chicks, you know, hanging out together and doing, you know, team related things when they're all actually part of, you know, other, you know, organized X-Men teams. So, you know, I'm glad that they at least addressed that. And I think that kind of led into, you know, the discussion between Rachel and Storm kind of fostered, you know, like grows from that. It's like, hey, what are we doing together? Why are you in charge? You know?
Right. And Rogue going fangirl over. Yeah. Rogue going fangirl over Psylocke's powers. Which was kind of cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
her hair changed dark purple, black, whatever. Let's see. Valiant, just want to mention them real quick. They had Bloodshot Zero and Etso Manowar number 16. Definitely going to at least read Etso Manowar number 16 this weekend. And I need to.
You got reviews up all those?
Actually, yeah, both reviews are both up, courtesy of Coates Villain on Twitter. Thanks to him for doing my Valiant reviews. And I guess now we can mention the books from last week that we read. I'll let Agent 70 go first if he would like.
Sure. I had two books I wanted to mention. Yes, it is getting late. I had two books I wanted to mention. One is actually, I didn't realize this. During the course of the show, I looked it up on the Boom Studios website. It's actually a reprint of, I guess, the first issues. Was Hero Bear and the Kid, The Inheritance, number one. This was released last week. I remember seeing Hero Bear and the Kid on in the comic shops. I remember reading it. I just don't recognize the story. I didn't realize this was a reprint. You know, this is very well done stuff by Mike Kunkel. You know, it's great art and a charming story. It's a charming opening to a 5-part story. And I would definitely recommend this book to, you know, someone trying to introduce maybe a younger reader to comics.
I gave this to my son, actually. Yes. He loved it. He's 8, so it was perfect for him.
It's definitely, definitely cool. And just for someone who, would appreciate the artwork, you know, this is definitely something to pass along. I would be comfortable passing this along to just by anyone who wanted to just pick up who asked me for a random comic this week that didn't require too much lead time or too much advance notice. I would hand them this. It was actually, I really liked this book. Like I said, I didn't realize it was a reprint, but at the same time, it's still worth second look. And I also want to touch on Uncanny X-Force number 10. This is something that I wanted to catch up on. I didn't have a chance to read it last week. I see that they're finally back to developing the Bishop storyline 10 issues into the story. I can't believe they haven't touched on it, you know, since the first arc. There's actually a cool homage to a Wolverine scene from the Phoenix storyline, where Wolverine is basically driven down. He's shot down into the sewers. From I forget the guy from the Hellfire Club with the gravity powers, the fat guy. You know, the old timers will remember that.
Yeah, but, I can't think of his name right now.
Right, but Wolverine gets shot down into the sewers, and there's a scene where he's, you know, like it's like John Byrne at pretty much at his finest, and it's Wolverine looking up, and he's like, he basically says something like, you know, you guys took your best shot, now it's my turn,
and it's an iconic. Like that.
Exactly, it's an homage to that Byrne panel, and I thought that was nice.
Okay. I'm going to speed through mine very quickly. Like I said, Red Ghosted 1 and 2 for the weekend. Red Harbinger Wars number 2 from Valiant, even though that didn't come out last week. I'm trying to get through the Harbinger Wars miniseries. East of West number 5, read that. It made a lot more sense once I talked to Empress Geek on Twitter. She explained what had been going on in the previous couple issues of East of West, because, you know, it's Hickman mumbo jumbo, a lot to take in. Six Gun Gorilla number 3 from Boom Studios. Enjoyed that. I can't remember if it's an ongoing series or a mini series, but enjoying it either way. Nightwing 23, I'm enjoying the art from Will Conrad, and it seems like they're going to be ending the whole Tony Zuko story just in time for the Villains Month stuff to begin, because supposedly Nightwing's going to play an important role, and there was news on that, but I'll say that for later. And one more, Green Lantern Corps number 23. Read those over the weekend. So, we need to do our picks of the week. Click of the week book. What books did we? What pick? One book you enjoyed from this week? I don't know.
I would say X-Men 4. That would probably be mine.
I'm gonna go Thunderbolts 14.
All right. Surprise, surprise for me. My pick of the week was it's a tie between Avengers 18 and Ultimate Comics 29. I really enjoyed Avengers 18 and the whole space war saga type thing, you know, going on. Ultimate Comics 29 got me. There's a couple of cool twists, and I thought the story was well done. So those are my co-picks of the week.
Cool.
I'm gonna go with one that you actually forgot to talk about. And it's a Marvel book that you forgot to mention.
X-Men Legacy.
Dexter, number 2. I don't know if you guys are, you know, obviously Dexter is the TV show that's making a lot of money, whatever. But this is actually written by the guy who wrote the original novels, Jeff Lindsay. And so this is set in the novel universe, which is a little different than the TV universe, but not a whole lot at this point. But basically the storyline in this book is, when Dexter was in high school, there was a bully who tormented him, and he was going to make the bully his first victim. So he had the guy drugged, stripped, you know, saran wrapped down to the table, and he's getting ready to cut into him, and he gets interrupted. Someone comes in the room. So they have to play it off like it was some sort of prank, and the bully is kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, we're just, you know, he was, you know, teaching me a lesson. You know, we're just goofing around, whatever. And this guy has left and come back. And he knows who Dexter is. Like, he's been following the news. He's seen the murders. He's got it figured out that Dexter is the serial killer guy. And so he's trying to – I guess the easiest way to say it, he's trying to mess with Dexter, trying to get him to slip up or do something that makes it obvious. He's trying to trap him in some way and, you know, whatever. So there's this kind of mental feud going on between the two of them. And so, like, he's charming Rita, Dexter's wife, you know, and so she really likes the guy, so she always wants to, you know, spend time, whatever, and he starts charming Dexter's sister, and, you know, there's this murder investigation going on and everything, and it's laid out like, if you've ever read any of the novels, you know, they're different from the TV show, kind of like the Fletch novels are way different from the Fletch movies. You know, it ties into that. It's structured kind of the same way, layered the same way, and it's really good. So if you've ever seen the show, if you've ever read any of the novels, you're kind of interested in that, you definitely want to pick that up and check it out, because it is really good.
Okay. Cool.
Nice. If I can, real quick. If you, like me, are old and like the original... thank you. Like the original Battlestar Galactica series from 1978, the book, the comic book, has actually been a pretty good read. Like, three came out last week. I haven't read it yet, but I've been reading the first... Like, I just picked up the first two and decided to just go on in. And it's an interesting take on that series. And they're kind of spin into some time, you know, some time shifting mumbo jumbo, as you guys say. So there is that involved. And this three, it's kind of seemed like it might be pretty interesting about what potentially is going to happen. So.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for that. Tim, do you want to just mention? I just wanted to mention Twitter has been, there's been some conversations on Twitter while we've been going on. People who are watching and listening to the show, especially once we broke the Batman news, it all started from there. thanks. Shout out to Dork Geekus, who's refreshing my recollection. It was Leland, the Black Bishop, the member of the Hellfire Club, the fat guy that drove Wolverine down into the sewers with his gravity powers, you know, back in the Dark Phoenix saga. Dorkikis also mentions that the whole beef between Rachel and Aurora in X-Men number 4 is kind of forced because Aurora has always been a strong leader type on the X-Men, and Rachel really hasn't had that kind of history, so it seems like a non-starter, non-issue in terms of an argument. So I can agree with that, but I think that you know without a mandate for this particular team, you know, kind of a haphazard type team, it's even a kind of a Defenders type team, you know, that's kind of thrown together. You know, sometimes leadership issues come, like, you know, they just sort of come naturally.
All right. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in live or on tape delay, however your method of viewing or listening to us. I want to thank Roddy Cat for joining us tonight. Let everyone know where they can follow you on Twitter.
Thank you for having me, sir. I appreciate it. Hopefully I wasn't too, I don't know, my words are leaving me tonight. So, and I'm the night owl. You know, I'm actually the night owl of the bunch, so go figure. But you can find me at Roddy Cat, RODDYKAT. And, or if you happen to like tech, comic, movie, that kind of news, go over to at News Nerds Need, where I pretty much retweet a whole bunch of stuff when I get to it from posts in that section.
Yeah, I forgot about your second Twitter account.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And,
hey, we all have second and third Twitter accounts, so it's okay.
Yeah, but I only use mine to retweet my own tweet, so then I feel like
I'm at TimDOGG98, and Dirt is at PCN_Dirt, and Agent 70 is at Agent_70. So once again, I want to thank you all for tuning in. I'm TimDOGG. And this is the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Jeff Johns, Alan Moore, or Grant Morrison.